Hey, it's good to see you guys. Several of you, making fun of Shock the Flock here. I'm not making fun of him. He's a good friend, and I appreciate what he does. I just have a tendency to say things that get me in trouble, and he's very gracious. This weekend, while you're here, Jeff Stroman's right back there. Say hi, Jeff. Stand up so we can see you there. We do a radio program, HopeNet 360. Jeff and I do that together, and love you to get to know him this weekend. And really, through that program, young people can go, anyone can go and talk to a life coach anytime, type things in. And we're really trying to help young people, especially. In those moments where they need to talk to somebody, give them a place to do that and guide them to our King. You know, that's one of the most important things we can do is provide that opportunity. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Dave. I've been here like forever. Not really, but this is my 49th year I'll be celebrating here. And 35, my dad was in charge. I had to come. You got to go with your family. That's the rule. But for the last 35, I've had the privilege of being in charge of the ministry and just love what I do. I don't think I've gone to work yet in those 35 years. I keep trying to figure out when it's going to start and when my bubble is going to burst. But I still enjoy getting up in the morning, getting in the Word, and then being able to share it with people. And share what I've learned, what I'm thinking about. I get to travel the country and do that, and I've been talking to kids now for so many years that, you know, in one way, I'm very excited about being able to talk with you about what the scriptures have to say. In another way, it's discouraging because it seems like it doesn't matter anymore. It seems like there's certain things that are going south, and whether we want to stop them or not, they're going that way. And yet I know that's not true. I know that the Bible tells us that the heart of the King is in the hand of the Lord. And like rivers of water, he moves it wherever he wishes. And for us that know him, there's always hope and there's always a plan. And we just need to be able to make sure we're in the middle of it. And I don't think it's really that difficult. One of the things I was doing is I was going through, as I read the Bible through every year, I was reading and I was in the book of Revelation. And I was looking and I was thinking, these churches, there's a message to them. You know, they're different churches, but there's a message that is common to what we have today in our lives. And so what I want to do this weekend with you is, I hope I can get through all seven of them, but I want to give you the commonality. In other words, these churches were being told something. What were they being told, and are we in the same position? And I think we are in a lot of respects. See, that we make things way too complicated at times. Things aren't much different than they've ever been. They're really not. I mean, people think, well, today, you know, all this stuff's going on. Did you ever live during the time of Caesar? The answer is no, you haven't. But I'm telling you, there were some pretty wild things going on back then. And I can imagine everyone that was saying, ooh, this is bad. You know, I mean, can you imagine all the prostitution stuff and all this and their worship in the emperor and all? Bad. You know, we're quite a bit down the road from that. And we could look at today and we could say the same things. But you know, the church has a very particular function. But what is it? See, a lot of times what happens if you ask that, someone's going to say, yeah, well, church is important because, because I find help there. Because my buddies, because fellowship. And I agree. But have you ever wondered why we as a culture describe church always as being about us? Somehow? Do you realize that maybe the problem, if we look at our culture, we look at what's going on, the problem is a lot simpler than we think. Maybe we've made everything so much about us. It's about our understanding, and it's about our comfort, and it's about our opinions. It's about our thoughts on what color the carpeting should be in our church. It's about our whether people appreciate us, like I appreciate me. Maybe the church was never meant to be about me or you. Maybe it was never meant to be about comfort. Maybe the church was never meant to be about unbelievers even. Maybe it was meant to be about believers who were out in the world and they brought unbelievers in after they became believers. Maybe we've emphasized the wrong things in church. Maybe not, but maybe we have. One of the fun things to be able to do is go into the scriptures and begin to see the commonality of what God says to the churches about what we need to correct. Because there's a way it should be. I don't know, have you ever tried something and just tried, you knew it wasn't going to work, but you tried it anyway? I know I might be the only guy that ever does that, but you know it's not going to work. When I've done so many things. I mean, I keep thinking, this has got to work. Whenever my kids used to hear that, it was like they started laughing immediately. I remember my daughter just moved in a house down there in Neenan, and we were helping her, and she didn't have any television reception, and I was bound and determined to get an antenna on that roof, and I didn't have a ladder long enough. I did have two ladders. I just didn't have one long enough. I thought, this has got to work. So here I am. Not only am I going to carry an antenna up on the roof. Oh, and by the way, you got to go up there in one trip. I mean, you got to be able to carry the antenna, all your stuff, everything in one trip. That's what you got to be able to do. So it's like, I can do this. And so I went outside, and I made sure all the girls were inside. I did one of those numbers. And I went out there, and I put one ladder on the floor, and then I put another ladder on top of that ladder and leaned it. And I'm thinking, I know, OSHA, that this isn't approved. I know that. But it's a private residence. And then I need this. And I went inside. And for sure, my youngest daughter came out. And all of a sudden, I heard this laughing going on. And all of a sudden, I heard, Mom! It's like, oh, busted. And I just lost it because I knew, man, I'm trying to do something. These things weren't made to do that. This is going to be a disaster. But you know what? For some reason, I was going to do it anyway. I thought, I'm going to get by with this somehow. I don't know how many times I've done that in life. I am a real adventurer. I would like to try it and go out there and do it. As a kid, I thought, I'll bet you I could shape rock with a skill saw. Let me tell you from experience, you can't. You'll ruin that skill saw 100% of the time. Well, maybe some rock you could if it was shale or something, but I was, granite doesn't work, that much I know. Do you ever realize that when God made the universe, he made it a certain way. And when he made man, he made us a certain way. And when he made woman, he made him a certain way. It's the way he made him. It's simple. It's not that hard to figure out. We make it complicated. You know, we make everything complicated. What happens when things get overly complicated? I mean, do you realize you can go somewhere now and people have trouble figuring out what bathroom to use? How complicated is that? It isn't that complicated. How long is the tax code? Last I heard it was 170,000 pages. Did anyone here ever read it? Did anyone ever read it anywhere in the world? I mean, there's no way people know what's in that code. Oh, they know pieces of it. How come it got so complicated? You know why? Because people were in charge trying to figure out how to make it so we could pay for those stop signs, but I don't have to pay for them. But we need to figure out how to pay for them, but just not me. We need to figure out how to pay for all kinds of stuff, but I don't want to pay. So I got to figure out loopholes and figure. Do you realize I started to think that's what the church is like? We want to accomplish something, but I don't want to do it. So let's figure out how to make it look like I'm doing it, but I'm not really doing it. And before you know it, you got this complicated church system out there somewhere. It's not that hard. We as people who understand who God is and have a relationship with him, we were made a certain way. The universe was made a certain way. The world was made a certain way. And when we don't live like we were made, we're out of sync with the universe. Not just God, the whole universe. We're out of sync with the earth. We're out of sync. There's the way it was made. And we gotta realize that. And as we realize that, we adjust according to the way it was made. The churches. The very first church that's spoken to is the church in Ephesus. And it says in Revelation 2, 1-7, this is not 1-7, it's the beginning of it. It says, the church, it talks about the church that had forsaken its first love. It's forsaken its love. What is this love thing that's been abandoned? What is it? How can you forsake something like love? What are we talking about? Who puts those two words together? Forsaking love. Did you ever put those two words together other than reading it? Did you ever tell your wife, have you forsaken your love? We don't do that. How is love something that can be forsaken? Well, love isn't a feeling, obviously. It's not there because it's convenient. Love is all the way through the Bible. It's really important. I was reading some really interesting articles recently and some really dumb ones. And one of the dumb ones was talking about how everybody's feelings determines actually who they are and what they, I mean, as far as gender and that kind of thing. And it's like, oh, come on, get out of here. Our feelings don't direct anything. It's not that you don't have them. You have them. You and I have them. But feelings don't direct us. If they do start to direct us, what happens is you're out of sync with the universe. See, you and I aren't animals. We're created different than animals. Go check it out in Genesis. The difference between us and animals is we're rational beings. We are made in the image of God. We can choose. We have choice. We can do those things. We do not live by our instincts. We live by the renewing of our minds. See, we do that, and we think things through, and we make choices. We can actually go against our feelings. We can do that. We can go against what we want. We can actually make choices based on what's best for somebody else and not us. We can do that. We have that capability. And what love is, the word for love in the Bible, I wish we would change it in English, should be the word committed. See, basically what happens is when you fall in love, you don't fall in love. What you're doing is you're committing to another person the rest of your life. You're committing to their well-being. They're committing to you. It's a commitment thing. So when you abandon or you forsake, what you're doing is you're forsaking your commitment. That's what you're doing. And see, this church in Ephesus, it was a church that had forsaken its commitment. It made a commitment. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm telling you something. Making a commitment in life is extremely important. It shows who you are. It bears your character. Commitment means something. If you tell somebody you're going to be there at 8 o'clock, you be there at 8 o'clock. Why? Because you said you would. I know. Said like such an old guy. You know, it's interesting. Many years ago, there was a young man up here, and he, I might have told this story before, but maybe not. I'm getting older. I can't remember what I said. But this guy was here, and he was part of our college program, Nicolet Bible Institute here. And summer was coming up, and he came and saw me one day, and I was mentoring him, and he said, Dave, I got this great job for the summer. I wanted to, and I'm supposed to be here for the summer. I committed to the summer, but this guy's going to pay me an awful lot of money. And I said, look, pretend I'm not in charge of camp, okay? What are you doing? The worst thing you could do is break a commitment. You said you were going to be here. I don't care if they offer you $5 bazillion next year for leaving. You said you were going to be here to the end of summer. And if you're going to walk out on a commitment, you are breaking something that, I mean, this is something that you can control. Don't do this. He has often been a pastor. Now he's a teaching pastor. He was at a church of 5,000 people. And he's used this example a lot, how it just turned his life around. He didn't know how he'd get the money if he went to school, but it's a long story, and I'm not going to go into it, but I want to tell you something. All along his journey so far, God has provided for him. Recently, he got word that he could go to another, he wants to get his doctorate, and one day he'd like to be a guy who knows the original languages so well that he can defend the Bible, make sure it stays whole, make sure it stays God's word. I'm thinking, you? Really? That's great. In order to do it, he calls me up one day and he says, in order to do this, I need to go to school in England for 3 years. I don't have any money to do that. And he said, but I've learned. I'm calling you because I want you to watch this journey with me. Got a hold of me not too long ago. Guy sat him down for lunch. I mean, this was an enormous amount of money he needed. First year, I think he needed over $100,000. Guy sat him down and gave him $50,000. Other people, this and that. I'm thinking, I told him, take notes. Why? Because you made a commitment years ago and you're still following that commitment and you are still in the field of commitment. See, commitment is honored. God honors commitments. You say, what if it costs me? It will cost you. Your commitments will cost you. One of the things I fear for the millennial generation growing up, and I don't dislike millennials, believe me, but one of the things I fear is that they can't make a commitment. They keep waiting for a better offer. They keep waiting for something better to show up. They keep make a commitment. When you become a believer, actually what's happening is you're accepting the commitment that God made for you and you make a commitment. You make a commitment back to him as God and you make a commitment. When you get married, you make a commitment. When you're part of a church, you make a commitment to the other people. And it's a radical, it's a crazy commitment, but you don't break it. You do not break the commitment. You see, the church had forsaken their commitment. And my question is for anybody, why would we abandon that? Why would we abandon a commitment to anybody? Why would we do that? What would cause us to? Well, we didn't have all the information. But doesn't the Bible already teach you to be slow to speak? Don't be making commitments the first second you're with somebody. Think about what you're doing. Make some plans. But if you make a commitment, This last few months, there's been some very rough things that have happened. Many of you have known the incident that happened in Antigo, the shooting at the prom that took place there. The guy, the father of that boy that got shot, was on our staff here up till 2 weeks before that shooting. I remember going to talk to him after the shooting. And I asked him, you do know, I said, you remember that God's commitment to you hasn't changed, right? You realize, all you guys sitting here tonight, that God's commitment to you is steadfast. It will never change. Before you were ever born, he knew you. When you were in your mother's womb, he knew you. And he created you. And he knew why he created you. And he gave you a personality. And he gave you talents. And he gave you abilities that he knew he was giving you. And he has been committed all of your life to show you his love. He did it first, that while you were sinners through Jesus Christ. And the rest of your life, he has been working you so that you could live in harmony with him because that's what you were made to do. His commitment hasn't changed. It's our commitment that fails, not his. His commitment will never fail. But our commitment. See, that's what's happening here at the church in Ephesus. They're being told, what happened to your commitment? What happened to your love? What did you forsake it for? What in the world would cause you to go back on what you said? What in life would cause you to do that? You know, right now, if you could go back on a commitment that you've made to somebody, then you didn't make a commitment. See, commitments don't do that. The church in Ephesus was an interesting place. Ephesus was a city on the western coast of Asia Minor, near the mouth of a river. It was believers, obviously. This wasn't a bunch of pagans they were writing to. There was this group that I'll talk about in a minute called the Nicolaitans or whatever you want to call them. I went to a Chicago public school. I don't know how to speak. The lampstands that are spoken about are the churches, and the stars are the pastors, if you read through Revelation. Just to give it a little perspective, and I always encourage you to go back and read the chapter like 100,000 times and just immerse yourself in it. The city was famous for its Temple of Diana. Now, I'm telling you something. We think we got pressures today. There were pressures in history all the time. Same pressures you have today. There were pressures to be all about money. There were pressures to be all about sex. There were pressures to be all about, there were pressures all the time. Satan knows what buttons to push. And he's been pushing them since Adam and Eve. He understands. You know, I heard Tony Evans speak today, and I don't know, I'd have to check it out, but Tony Evans was talking about Satan and Lucifer, what his job was before the fall. He was in charge of worship. Whoa. Now what does he want? Worship. I want the worship. Isn't that interesting? How easy it is for those of us to stand in front and teach or lead worship, how easy it is to start wanting you to worship us instead of God. It's a great danger. There's only one God. You see, in these cities where they were, the problems were the same as you and I experience today. There were all kinds of distractions, all kinds of things that should not have been. Let me take you through it a little bit here. In the beginning, you're going to see that it ends up being an abandonment, but there was an authority. The authority is God. It says, the words of him who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks among the seven golden lampstands, the words of him, the one who holds it together. Think of how God is always referred to. He is the solid one. He is the one that will not move. He is the one that is committed. He is the one you can count on no matter what. He will not move. So when he says something, it's the way it is. Isn't that weird? We live in a culture where when you say something, it may not be the way it is. But when God says something, it's the way it is. There is no movement there. You might say, oh, yeah, does he think he's right? Yes. And he is right. Does he have an opinion? No. Never had one. He doesn't have a perspective, doesn't have an opinion. He's always right. Well, isn't that ego? No. Think about it. If you're right, you're right. I mean, if you're right, it doesn't make you an egomaniac. You know, the Packers had a better record than the Bears. I'm right. Oh, you Packer fan. Look, I'm right. I'm sorry. But I'm right. And I'm not sorry. The Cubs haven't won a World Series in over 100 years. Oh, yeah, I know. I'm a Cub fan. This is our year. It has been for years. You know, it's interesting when you start thinking about it. The word of him who holds. That young man that got shot in Antigo, bullet went below his knee, an assault rifle, went in small, came out big. He didn't die. He's going to be here this summer working here. He didn't die. It wasn't his time. Because there's one that holds. It wasn't his time. You see, there's nobody in this world, there's nobody in this universe that can stop God from being who God is and that can give God advice. There is nobody. See, for you and I, we have a hard time almost understanding because God is so far beyond our understanding. But when he says something, it's the words of him who holds the seven. This is the one who's speaking has authority. We have to understand it. It's not Dave Wager. It's God. And here's what he says. I know your works. It's like sometimes when you and I pray, we're trying to convince God, hey, I had a good motive for this. You know what? Forget it. Just forget it. He knows about your motive. You do not need to convince God that you were okay on this one. Well, he knows it. If anybody knows it, he knows it. So when you're talking to God, remember, you're talking to somebody who's committed to you, who knows how you were made, who knows why you were made, and he knows everything about you right now, and he knows if you're telling the truth or not, and he knows it all. So when he says, I know why you did this, I know your works, he does. Don't try and sell him something. In our culture, we keep trying to sell God who we are or sell people who we are. No, don't do that. He knows. I love it. He's the one that holds it together, and he knows. I don't need to come to him and justify anything. I don't need to come and say, God, well, I did this because. The minute I do that, he goes, No, Dave, you did it because you were self-centered. No. I'm getting better, though. You're right. You're only about 90% self-centered right now. But you're still self-centered. It's like a piece of dirt in something that makes it impure. See, it's like we don't want to deal with somebody like that. Do you realize why the world doesn't want to deal with God? There's no wiggle room. He's God. We're not. There's no kind of sort of maybes. It's either right or wrong. And for me, I cling to that. I love that. I love the idea that there's an absolute. I can count on something. Can I count on government? I don't think so. Can I count, can I count on my own dad? He died. One day he was gone. Guess I can't count on him either. See, who can I count on? God. Alone? Alone. I know your works. What's interesting, and he goes and he says, your works of toil. Let me read it to you. In the book of Revelation, said, the angel to the church of Ephesus write, the words of him who holds the seven stars in the right hand, who walks among the seven golden lampstands. I know your works, your toil, your patient endurance. It's not that he doesn't see the good part. I know this. I know all the good stuff you do. You know, did you ever, when you were a kid, somebody correct you? But I did this good. You did. It's not like you do everything stupid. Not everything. There's some things you do really well. But there's some things that you don't do well. If you want to be in a position where you actually succeed in life, you need to surround yourself with people. You need to be sensitive to the Holy Spirit and allow them to challenge you in ways that you will not understand because they're totally outside your world looking into it. They can see things and understand things that you will not see and understand. So when God comes and he says, I know your deeds, I'm the one that holds you together. And by the way, I know your good deeds. I know them. I've seen them. And I appreciate them. I know your deeds. I know your works, your toil, your patient endurance, how you cannot bear with those who are evil, but have tested them who call themselves apostles and are not, and found them to be false. He says, you even go after people who don't know what they're talking about. I know that. That's great. You got all this stuff going for you, man. You got churches. You got them full. You're giving money to the poor. You're doing, love it. I love all that stuff. That's good. And I know you're doing that. Do you ever think that maybe you can go to your wife someday and say, yeah, you know, I've given you all the money I make. We got this beautiful house and all this stuff. I spend time with you and do all this and oh, yeah, I do have those affairs. But see, what we tend to do is, what we tend to like to do is lump, you know, we did a lot more good than we do bad. That's what we like to do. And therefore, we feel really good about ourselves. Is that really what it's about, doing a lot more good than bad? Is it okay for us to be kind of good and kind of Christian and almost Christian and somewhat Christian? We kind of obey God. When you growing up, did your parents ever come, did you listen to me? I used to answer, sort of. In other words, I kind of listened to you. We told you not to play baseball in the living room. It was a frisbee. Gotcha. You didn't say frisbee. You know, one time we had a different secretary here, office manager, and it was summer after summer, there were these things, and I thought, we shouldn't have to tell people some of these things that they shouldn't have to do, they shouldn't be doing. And I wanted her to keep a list. She wouldn't do it for me. I said, keep a list of these really stupid things, because someday I want to read it and laugh at all the stuff. You know, you shouldn't... you know, use bug spray for hairspray, stuff like that. You shouldn't take the bug spray, put a match to it, you know, make a torch out of it, and put it on birch trees, stuff like that. Stuff that is obvious going to cause damage, but they do it anyway, and even other things that amaze you. But he says this, you know, I know you are enduring patiently, bearing up for my name's sake, and have not grown weary. Can you believe if God was saying all those great things about you? I just listed some really great things. Great things, really good things. But then it stops there and it says, but I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first. You've abandoned something that's very precious. You've turned your back on it. You've abandoned your commitment. But I have this against you. You have abandoned the love you had at first. Remember, therefore, from where you have fallen. Repent. Do the works you did at first. If not, I will come to you and remove your lampstand from its place. But what about all that good stuff? Doesn't that balance it? From talking to my wife. What about all the, you know, 300 days last year I was faithful to you. I was only not faithful 65. What about those days? That's what God's talking about. See, the thing with God is relational. It isn't rules. It isn't a scale. It's relational. And so for you and me to think that, well, most of the time I do okay, that won't fly in relationships. When I played football, it wouldn't fly, by the way. Most of the time I make that block. You know what the coach would say? You're second string then. You make that block all the time. That quarterback's counting on it. Most of the time I can shed that block. No. The times you can't, they're going to score. We don't want you out there when you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Yeah, but most of the time. How many scores do they have in a game? How many times do you need to let them score? Remember, therefore, where you have fallen, repent. You know, it's interesting, abandonment, the idea of abandonment, leaving, gone, just turning your back on something. Did you ever see something abandoned? It's like it's in the middle of its purpose and boom, gone. There's Disney put a park and it's still there. They don't use it anymore. I forget, it's on some island. And one day they all left. That's the water slide. It was still usable when they left. Everything was in place and they left. It was abandoned. You look at it and you go, wow, all this potential. Yeah, you know, when God looks at us and we've abandoned our love to him, our commitment to him, he probably looks at us and goes, all that potential, oh man, it's all right there. But that's what it looks like now. Used to have some usefulness. Well, we could clean it up now, but you know how kind of effort it's going to take to clean that up and use it again? You know, guys, in our lives, there are times when we abandon what we shouldn't abandon. We abandon good decisions. We abandon listening to God. We abandon our love. And stupid things happen to us in life then. And then later in life, we want to clean it up. Do you know how much time it takes to clean that up? Do you know how much effort it takes to clean it up? Let's not get there in the first place. Let's grab the next generation and talk to them. Say, look, don't get there, man. It takes too much time to clean this up. I don't know how many guys have come to me my age and say, yeah, you know, I messed up life. I cheated on my wife, got a divorce, got remarried. Cheated on her, got divorced, got remarried. Now I'm walking with God. I got all these old wives and children. And how do I make this work? I go, oh, man. It's hard. There's a lot of cleanup work now. And some of it's going to stain forever. I'm sorry, you can't get it all out anymore. You abandon your love. You abandon your commitment. Abandonment is terrible. Think of a child, two parents. Let's leave the kid. Just born, let's abandon him. All that potential, all of it. Why? Abandon. That's a crisis. This abandoned thing's a crisis. That slide's a crisis. They're like water slides. What's interesting, in Matthew, Jesus talks about how this kind of thing happens. He says, then they will deliver you up to tribulation, put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Again, I want to tell you something here. God's commitment to us is steady, and his commitment to the Apostle Paul, to the apostles, was these guys were getting beat up. They were being burned by Nero. They were not to give in. Circumstances were not to dictate whether they were going to be faithful or not. See, in America, I think we've gotten soft. I think our churches have gotten soft. It is not about that. You know, we might take it on the chin coming up here. We might. I'm actually running around the country teaching that boys are still boys and girls are still girls, and that God has a plan. Visit me in jail, would you? We can do no other. Am I criticizing somebody? Only if they don't want to talk about reality. We're not saying anything weird here. Here's what happens, though. You'll be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many, listen to this sad statement. Jesus is saying this. And many will fall away and betray one another. Many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. Because lawlessness will be increased, the love of many will grow cold. Because lawlessness will be increased, the love, the commitment of many will grow cold. What's he saying? Because people won't be committed to doing things right. The lawlessness will increase. The idea of just not having anybody in charge of the universe, the idea of me being it, that will increase. You know, when this shooting took place in Antigua, one of the things I thought right away was, you know, I can hear the public already say, this has got to stop. But nobody has the tools to do it. You know what's going to happen without God? You know what you're going to do? You're going to bring in comfort dogs. That's what you're going to do. You're going to let everybody have a hug. I'm not against comfort dogs. I'm not against people hugging dogs. But it's not going to solve the problem. There is a way to solve this. Yeah, guys like me act like we know it all, don't we? Now, you know what? I'm not very smart. I've learned that. I'm just very experienced after all these years. And I've never seen a problem yet solved by a comfort dog. I've seen moments of comfort, but I haven't seen anything solved. You see, we are a culture who has begun to live as if there are no standards, as if there is no commitment, as if God has no real way for us to live. And we've kind of accepted anything goes mentality. You can love Jesus and just do what you want. And because the lawlessness will be increased, the love of many will grow cold. I've talked to a lot of young guys who struggle with pornography, and one of the things I tell them is they're not looking at this thing right. See, when you are willing to lust or look at pornography, what you're saying basically is, I'm willing to use somebody else for my own benefit, and I really don't care about them. And they look at me and say, that's not what I'm saying. Yes, it is. Because if you actually cared about them, you wouldn't allow yourself to look at that, because that's somebody's daughter, that's some misguided individual. You wouldn't be doing it. In fact, you might actually be willing to use somebody and hurt them for your own pleasure and not really care. You've abandoned any idea of love. What did God say was important? In life, when Jesus was asked, what's important? Love the Lord your God, and love your neighbor. Two things, love. Abandon those two things, what do you got? Loving God, simple, it's defined for us, obey God. It doesn't mean obey somebody else. Remember, in the Bible, the definition of love toward God is obedience. He's the only one that definition goes that direction. Why? Because he's perfect. He's older than you, smarter than you, loves you, you can trust him. He's got the definition. If I love God, I obey him. That's how it looks. If I intentionally don't obey him, I certainly don't love him. So if I say through songs or through my words that I have a commitment to him, then don't obey him. I've abandoned that. I haven't done that. I lied. And then we're supposed to love one another. That's a simple thing too. That means when I look at you, you look at me, what we're thinking is, God, how can I make that person successful? What do I need to do to help that person be successful? Help me understand that. I want to make their life what it should be. May mean that you have to rebuke them. Maybe that you have to encourage them. I don't know. But the idea is, how can I live so that they can be successful? That's the idea. Not how can I live so that I can be successful and use them for me. You abandon that, we have problems. The abandonment of absolutes equals the abandonment of love. When there are no absolutes, then there is no love. Why? Because God is love and he is absolute. I mean, that's the way it is. You abandon that, now what happens? Whose absolutes are right then? Yours, mine? I don't know how many times through history as I get to speak, somebody come and go, so you think you're right? And I go, actually, what I think doesn't have anything to do with right or wrong. What do you mean? Well, it's not what I think. I mean, I'm just reading the Bible for you. What you need to do is open the Bible and say, either, God, you're right or wrong. And I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to say, I don't even want to say that. If you abandon absolutes, there are absolutes, then you've abandoned love. You can't do it. Don't abandon them. There are absolutes in every way, shape, and form. God, there are absolutes in marriage. God made marriage to be a certain way between one man, one woman, committed for life. That's the way he made it. Look at all the problems that have existed because we've tried to twist that one. Sexual purity. You know, abortion wouldn't even be an issue if we listened to what God said. Wouldn't even be an issue. Wouldn't even be on the plate. When I hear it's an issue, I go, no kidding, why is that an issue? The issue is the abandonment of God, the abandonment of love. That's the issue. When two people have sex outside of marriage and a baby's created, you got a problem. But if you do it the way God said, then babies are created in the context of a family and a loving environment. What's the problem there? The issue isn't pro-life or pro-choice. It's whether you're pro-God or anti-God. Abandonment is interesting. You can't read this, it's too small. But it's the definition. So I'll put this here. Abandonment isn't surrender. It's different than surrender. It's the giving up of a thing absolutely. It's the walking away from something and thinking things will change. If you abandon God, you're in trouble. If you abandon your commitments, you're in trouble. See, abandonment is not a fruit of the Spirit. That's not good. It's bad. The only thing we're told to abandon is the way of the world. Leave it. Don't touch it. Don't look at it. That kind of stuff. But in relationships, abandonment is always bad. Abandonment is different from surrendering. Abandonment is running away from what we should be dealing with. We can abandon people. We can abandon our values. We can abandon our God. We can abandon love. And the word abandonment then gives us the idea of tremendous loss where there should have been tremendous gain. See, and that's what this first church is getting yelled at for. It's not that they didn't go after the heretics. It wasn't that they didn't do good things. It wasn't that they didn't have a resume of good. It was that they also abandoned their love, their commitment to God, and their commitment to one another. They abandoned that. They could actually probably, and I don't know, I'm speculating, but they could probably watch people who are supposed to be part of the family of God. They could watch them destroy themselves and say nothing. I'm telling you, if I know you well, one of the problems in our culture, men, there's a problem with men. You get together, you have these accountability groups or something, right? Only you're not accountable. Why? Because you're not doing life together. You got to do some life together to be accountable. You got to know what the other guy's doing. You got to know him well enough to say, what are you doing? How come you're doing that? What are you spending money on that for? What are you doing with your time there? How come you're doing that? If you're not doing it, see, we abandon, what we do is we redefine things. We get together with people, and then we actually abandon them and go be by ourselves. Man, it was not meant to be alone. And you know what? Somehow in this world, with all the communication, all that kind of stuff, we got more lonely people committing suicide than ever before. It's crazy. We should have people that are saying, man, I got people all over the place. I got relationships everywhere. I've got so many friends, it's nuts. We don't. Because we get together and everything we do is structured to make sure that nobody can get really into our lives. Because once they do get into our lives, they may ask hard questions. I don't know how many guys that once they've really gotten into their lives, they've abandoned me. They'll say, what are you doing this for? No kidding. In other words, someone might come and say, yeah, it's really tough financially, and they'll get into their life and they're going, you know why it's tough? You don't have any plan. You don't budget. What is wrong with you? You could budget better. Who do you think you are? Dave? This isn't rocket science. You're not the government. You can't spend money you don't have. Or you get in their life and all of a sudden you notice there's a problem. You've been drinking? Oh, no. Yes, you have. How often do you drink? I think you've got a problem. Then they look at me and go, I think you got a problem. How come I'm the problem now? Didn't you want me to be in your life? Accountability thing, friendship thing. Do you want me to abandon that? You want me to run because now I see something and I want to ask you about it? If you think I won't be your friend because I disagree with you, you don't know me well. I'll be your friend, but I'm going to be on your case. Like, because how can I be your friend and watch you destroy yourself? How can I do that? And you know what? If you're my friend, you're doing the same thing back at me. You need to be able to see how I live and what I do. I was talking to a guy once, and he's just talking about he didn't have time. I said, you don't manage your time well. Why aren't you judgmental? What? Go ahead. Live a mess. You see, this thing that we have at relationships, if we're going to be in a position where we can be what God wants us to, first and foremost, we need to understand his commitment to us and make a commitment to him. And make sure that nothing in this world will ever change that. Not one circumstance, not richness, not poorness. I mean, the old wedding vows, you know, in richness and poorness and health and whatever it is, I don't even know what it is. Why can you say that? Because there isn't a circumstance in this world. Guys like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they would rather burn. Stephen died. Paul died. Peter crucified upside down. Those are commitments. They didn't abandon. And what did God do with those things? We're still talking about Peter, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Paul. Yeah, they were real losers. You know, there's times that we make decisions because we're in these foxholes of life. You've heard there are no atheists in foxholes, but in reality, there's like foxholes all the time, different ones that we're in, that we are in for safety or fear or something. We get in these foxholes, and all of you might have been there. All of you have been there. You know, all of a sudden, you really need to talk to God because there are no options. You're in a foxhole, the enemies are shooting at you, and the only option you got is, God, please. You don't even see that time as a blessing from God when he puts you there because you needed to be in that spot so that you could see him and get things straightened out. But when you get out of the foxhole, see, you abandon what you learned in the foxhole. So what would happen in all of our lives if we didn't abandon what we learned during those hard times? Did you ever learn anything during a hard time? Did God ever reveal himself to you during those hard times? You know, if not, here, I want to suggest something. If you have not, in the hard times of life, seen God and seen him deliver you and see him give you the strength, I'm not saying cure you or anything else, then perhaps you're not even one of his children. Because his commitment to his children is a done deal. It's steady. It will always be there. It really isn't about me being good enough for him to be there. It's about God reaching out to me and my inadequacies in my sin. And while I was a sinner, he sent Jesus so that Jesus could pay for my sins and I could be in his family. And as a family member, and as God is my father, when times are rough, he's there with me. He is there with me. I was just, one of our, Johnny, our business guy here, his dad just died. And suddenly, his dad tripped, and it was last week, and he hit his face on the pavement and broke his neck. And he was about 80 years old. And his dad didn't want the machines keeping him alive. He wasn't afraid to die. They sat with him. They sang. They enjoyed the fact that he would be with his Heavenly Father shortly. It's a hard time. It's a hard time to decide whether you're going to pull the plug or not. It's a hard time. But God does not abandon his children in the hard times. He's there. Notice I did not say that he takes you out of the hard time. But he walks you through it. When Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego defied Nebuchadnezzar, and they didn't bow, they had to go to that furnace. God walked with them in that furnace. I don't know what he said. One day, I hope, if I remember when I see God, it's one of the questions that's always burning. What did you say to him in the furnace? Who was it actually in the furnace? And what did you say? Did you say, good job? Did you say, attaboy? What do you say to these guys? Go like this to Nebuchadnezzar. I'm not sure what you said. But here's what I know. You didn't abandon your children. I want to promise you this. God does not abandon his children. No matter how hard it gets, no matter where it happens, no matter how tough it gets, if they are faithful to him, he does not abandon them. I've been there. I've been laying in the hospital bed with a doctor saying, you may not make it. I did not feel abandoned for a moment. Why? Because I'm a child of God. God doesn't do the abandoning. We do. But when I was in the hospital bed, when Johnny's dad dies and he's standing there and there, see, those are the foxholes of life. When I come out of that foxhole, how easy is it to forget that the foxhole ever existed? Don't do that. Don't abandon those experiences. Those are experiences that God uses to show you who he is. He doesn't say, I'm not going to put you through them. Those are experiences he uses. So embrace them and learn from them and never forget them. And then he goes on, he talks about the deeds of the Nicolaitans. Who are these guys? Well, there's an argument about who they are, but let me summarize what we do know. This probably refers to an early clerical hierarchy. They were people that were in the church, if you want to call it, and they promoted sexual promiscuity. Generally, people agree to that, that that's who they were. In other words, they were part of a church, but they didn't promote purity. That isn't said in a nice way. These aren't people that you hold up. The deeds of the Nicolaitans. They were people that were to be shunned and run from. And then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another, it says in that passage. They'll hate one another. Do you know how easy it is for people in churches to start hating one another? Over stuff that doesn't matter at all. I don't know how many times churches have divided. Over what? People abandon them. It's a whole lot easier to abandon and start over. That's a whole lot easier. Abandon your church, abandon your wife, abandon your kids, abandon your car, leave it on the highway. You know, I did abandon a bus once, I must admit. It wasn't a good situation. I remember I was driving down to Chicago. It was my third bus trip of the year. We used to drive kids back and forth from here, and we had all these old junk buses. We painted them. They looked beautiful, but it was lipstick on a pig, believe me. And they would go down there, and this was the third bus that summer I blew up. Now, I'm just driving 55, boom, blows up. I don't know if you've ever been in the summer. We used to put all the kids' luggage on top. So we had all the kids in the bus, all their luggage on top. I'm a bus driver. 3/4 of the way down, we're in Illinois, boom, engine blows. I hit the clutch and pull it over, and I'm looking. My buddy Ron was ahead. We have a rule. If you get out of sight from each other, you got to pull off to the side, get your kids off there, drive back, and see if you got to help somehow. So he did. He came back. He dropped them off an A&W. I'm sure they were happy. Came back with an empty bus. We loaded all the luggage on his bus and all the kids, and he went back and took all his kids. So we had 120 kids on a bus. And I can remember, don't report me. And I can remember, I left the bus, I abandoned it on the highway. And I started walking down the highway that day. This is my third bus that summer. I was walking down the highway, and I remember I was crying like a baby and yelling at God. I remember looking to the sky and saying, "What are you doing? All I want to do is get kids to camp to hear the gospel, and you keep wrecking buses." I'm out of my mind at this point. I remember I walked to a phone, a gas station. There was a phone there. We used to have a quarter. And I put the quarter in there, and I called this lady, Berta, and I said, "Berta," I remember saying, "your bus is here," and I described it. And I hung up. We didn't have cell phones, but she didn't know what was going on. I was out of my mind. I just abandoned a bus. I abandoned my responsibilities. I abandoned Berta. And I was in Milwaukee, just north of Milwaukee, and I started walking back to camp along the side of the highway. And there I was, walking, had my camp shirt on, just walking, minding my own business. I wasn't about 10 feet back on the highway, and a car pulls over and honks their horn. I'm going, "What now?" It happened to be the youth pastor of the church that my dad was. He was going up to camp, and he saw a guy with a silver birch shirt and wondered what's going on. And I said, his name was Mike. I said, "Mike, I'm walking to camp." When you start abandoning your brain, you start abandoning what's right. Do you realize you could get into a spiral that is just incredible? Do you know that at that moment in history, I was willing to walk from Milwaukee to here? I kept saying, "I know the way. I drive a bus." Somebody had to come and say, "Get in the car." That was an act of love right then. Because I was in the middle of doing something that didn't make any sense at all to anybody. Except for me, and it didn't make sense to me. And the many false prophets that arise and lead many. See, there's many out there that will lead us astray. You know, tonight, I want to ask a question just to take away from tonight. And if we get through all seven churches, I'll be surprised. But we'll try. What would it take for you to rekindle that first love of yours? For you to get to the point where those foxhole experiences, when you really did realize who God was, or if you had the foxhole experiences and you thought you were abandoned by God, you better check out whether you're even God's. I'd love to talk to you this weekend. Jeff would love to talk to you this weekend. You see, what would it take for you to be one who enjoys the commitment that God made to you and the commitment that you will make to him and to others? What would it take for you to be able to walk into a fiery furnace or, like Stephen, just do what God says and have people stone you to death? And you do realize when he got stoned to death, he looked to heaven and he saw Jesus standing at the right hand of the Father, standing. See, in that day, like today, when they stood, what does that mean? That was showing honor. Do you realize that for a moment in history, the God of the universe showed honor to one of his creations? He stood. Was Stephen abandoned? Some of us think God's going to take us away from all the pain in this sinful world we live in. No, we live in a sinful world, and the byproduct of sinful world is separation from anything really good. Why would we run from God? Why would we abandon him? Why would we abandon the things that he says, which are the only things that are going to make sense and the only things that will hold the universe together? Why would we abandon doing best for other people? This first church did a lot of things right, but they abandoned their first love. I think we could fall in that same category. And that's what I would ask you to do tonight, is to think, God, have I abandoned you, the love that I had for you at one time? Or if I've never had a commitment to you, a love for you, why? We'll talk more about it this weekend. Because all the churches basically did something right. They all could point to the good stuff. They could point to it. I could walk around this camp here and point to all the really good stuff that God's done here. I could do that. And God wouldn't even disagree. Look at that. Yeah, those are good things. But Dave, have you ever considered this? Well, I would consider it, but I'm too busy looking at all the good things. Do you think Satan knows what that one little thing is, or those little things that you think are little? Boy, he's good at what he does. One of the baseline things that you and I need to realize is that God wants you and I to be about you and I, not about God. But if you're about God and you really know him and you're about him, here's what happens. The circumstances of life, all of them, become something that are springboards instead of obstacles. When I straightened it out in the hospital, I remember when I had the lung problem and I straightened it out, I started to walk the halls at night. I said, okay, God, I'm in here. You and me, middle of the night. Who needs to talk, God? And I went room to room, just looking to see who needed somebody to talk to. Open that door. Nah, that guy's in a coma. All right. This one. I never did find anybody. They were all pretty bad off. So that night, I ran around the hospital, the Catholic hospital. I took pictures, selfies of me with Catholic statues. Sent them to my wife. I said, well, this is what you do when you're bored in the middle of the night in the hospital. See, the point's simple. When a doctor comes to you and says, you're in a foxhole, what are you going to do right then? You have a choice. You can say, God, I need that circumstance changed so I can have my sugar daddy God in the sky. But what if the circumstance isn't going to change? What if it's your kid that gets shot going to a school function? I tell you, Dave, the guy, the father, and the mother, Tracy. I hope you've read their whole statement in the news because it glorifies God. They've forgiven the shooter. They went to the funeral of the shooter. The whole town, I think, is learning from them how to deal with pain. Am I glad that he's in pain and gets shot? I tell you, in context, you need to hear what I say. Of all the people that could get shot at that school that night, he was the perfect one. His family will hold together, and this foxhole will be better for them, and they will be on display for that community. Do I wish he got shot? Don't misinterpret me. I do not wish that. But if somebody had to be shot, if there was going to be somebody out there shooting people, the guy that got shot and the girl that got shot are camp kids. who will have the family structure to deal with it. And in their foxhole, they're going to learn something. And I pray that they don't abandon what they've learned in life. There are so many lessons for all of us if we look back. So many times God was faithful when we think he abandoned us, but he didn't. I was a kid that was in a wheelchair. I remember that. I got cut from an no-cut baseball team. That's how bad I am. Do you know, though, I look back on those moments, those foxholes, and I think, God, I learned something. I don't want to miss what I've learned. I don't want to forget what I've learned. I don't want to abandon what I've learned. Mostly, I don't want to abandon God. This old body of mine is going to fall apart one day. Somehow, it won't be here anymore. I'm going to get hit by a bus. Some horse is going to kick me in the head. Something. But one day, I won't be here anymore. But here's what I know for sure. I will never be abandoned by my God. To be absent from the body will be to be present with God. I love the story of the rich man and Lazarus. Tells us this. The rich man. Lazarus died. The Bible says Lazarus died and was carried to the Father. The rich man died and was buried. The next phrase, comma, in hell, talking about the rich man. The rich man abandoned God for the riches of this world. He abandoned. Read Matthew 5, 6, and 7. God talks about you can't serve God and money. See, they abandoned God and the relationships for money. Abandoned love for stuff. Oh, man. What would it take for any of us? What would it take for us to get back to where we belong? Don't think in terms of nation. Think in terms of self. What would it take for Dave Wager to get back where he belongs? Then we can talk about what can we do to bring our nation back. But it starts right here. God knows what he's talking about. I don't. I just tell you what he's talking about, I think. That's why you need to go read it yourself. Open the Bible. See what it says. I've taken a little liberty here. I'm not going into the book of Revelation. I'm just going into general principles within these churches that I think are still appropriate for today. Hope it makes sense. Well, in the morning, we'll try and grab a couple more churches and look at them and see what we learn from them, because each one of them has another lesson. This is the abandonment one. Don't abandon what's right. Don't abandon the good. If you have, get on your knees and ask God to forgive and start getting a real accountability partner. And there's guys that you've come with from your church, that kind of thing, talk to them. If you're not certain you're in God's family, talk to the guys that came with you. Say, how can he be certain? Start the conversation. Father, thank you that we could meet tonight. I thank you for these men. I ask your spirit to continue to speak to our hearts. Let us have a weekend that is a time of great relational renewal with you, with each other. Forgive us for so often forgetting what we learned in the foxhole. Seems like a distant memory sometimes. I pray that you will continue to teach and guide and direct. In Jesus' name, amen.